This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and today I have a musical treat here with you today. My uncle has joined us on the podcast, Bill Lonick. Welcome to the Speakeasy Studios.
Yo, hey, Chris, I'm happy to be here. This is exciting, man.
This is awesome, having a voice that really carries on these microphones.
Well, you know, that's why I was always in the position I was in, because I was loud, and I don't mind doing that.
Yes, and today you've requested a classic, some Jack and Cokes.
Absolutely. There's nothing better, especially when it comes to music. Jack and Coke.
That's the musician drink?
Well, you know, there's a story behind that, and that probably has, it's not a real good story, but it has to do with alcoholism.
Oh, perfect. That's what we want, alcoholism.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I mean, I never had trouble with it, but a lot of guys that were in music, they did struggle with it.
And okay.
That was probably one of the reasons why.
Well, you know, I got us some ice. And also, I got these brand new mugs that actually your stepson made for us.
Yeah.
The Brews and Crews mugs. So I figured what better way than to have some Jack and Cokes in this bad boy.
I'll tell you, that kid's he's a master of all trades.
I know. That's what I said. He's like everything. So I don't know if you want ice in yours, but I do. I love ice.
I do.
Tell us that story about between the alcoholism portion.
Well, you know, the thing about alcohol is it gives you, it kind of calms your nerves. And, you know, there's a lot of these guys would have stage fright. And, of course, man, stage fright is not an easy thing to deal with. It's, you know, it's a major case of high anxiety.
So I know we're going to get into all of your musical bouts, but stage fright, you said, is a real thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and even some of the coolest guys had stage fright.
Do you have a name that admitted to stage fright that's a bigger name?
Like,
is there anyone out there that says, they're said that?
I've been reading a lot on Eddie Van Halen lately, and he was one of them. You know, it was, and that's why he was one of the casualties, too, of alcohol.
Sure, sure. He,
very much so. But I think in general, oops, I'm going to keep it.
Nice.
Oh, look at that.
Perfect head. On there. Head. Should be a bartender.
That's, well, I'm a musician.
That's true.
That qualifies too.
And you requested Diet Coke, probably for health reasons, I suppose, for us.
You know what? And it was always a Jack and Coke. So when I got to this, to the stage in life where I was having trouble keeping weight off, yeah. You know, why not diet?
At least you can say they got zero calories in this bad boy.
Yeah.
there's also some stir sticks behind you if you want one. I don't know if you need a stir stick, but sometimes I like to have one.
We can
one.
Make it official. I always got one.
Actually, these are straws. They're not even sticks. These are just coffee straws.
That works. You're just stirring it up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Ooh. I mean, I'm a rum guy. I'm a rum guy. So
okay.
If you were to say, hey, what do you want with your Coke? I'm going to say Captain, or specifically Captain Private Stock, or some Bacardi Lime. I love Bacardi Lime. But yeah, so we're going to get into your musical attributes. But you said there are some people that need this in order to perform. Were you one of these people?
I was. It was kind of twofold. Number one, it would put you in the proverbial mood.
Sure.
Because you literally go from being this average individual working a 9-to-5 job
yep.
to this rock star type situation.
Yep.
And, you know, and it requires a different persona per se. So I used it for that, but because being a lead vocalist and because you're straining your voice throughout the night, that stuff works wonders on vocal cords.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
So I need to have this for the podcast to make me sound
better.
It'll
help. It'll help. Trust me, it'll help.
Okay.
You just want to make sure that you can put it down after the podcast.
Well, right. That's not the hard part because it is literally a Tuesday night when we're recording, so I got to go to work in the morning. But yeah, so I want to go back to you're big into music, but I want to go back to where it all started. Where did your love for music even come from?
Well, it was a family affair, no doubt about it. And, you know, everybody in my family played an instrument.
Okay.
I was kind of like the fifth child, was 6 years between me and my closest sibling. So I was kind of late to the party, so to speak. And, you know, and everyone was playing an instrument, so I was watching everybody do that. My sister, when I was 10 years old, she worked at a music store, and she bought me a drum set.
Ooh, and drums.
And I was good at it. I had natural rhythm, so it was easy for me to pick up these things. And, of course, being around it, you always got the syncopation of the beat of the song or whatever they happened to be doing. So that came naturally to me,
yep.
which made it very easy. But I drove my parents nuts for the next 5 years.
I bet.
Banging the crap out of those drums, you know. So I beat the hell out of them.
All right. Well, you know, I tried guitar one time in college. Sucked. Just sucked. Well, first of all, the one thing people don't realize is I'm left-handed at some things.
Ooh.
Guitar's one of them.
Yep.
Didn't realize it until I already had the nice guitar of the John Mayer Stratocaster.
Yeah.
And I tried it in college. I think the best I ever did was, I think the song I played was On Top of Old Smokey. And I had to play it for my graduation, quote unquote, from the music class or whatever I did. I had to play it in front of people on a stage. Crazy enough, I wasn't really scared to do it. I just knew I wasn't that great at it. It was pretty slow. But then I realized strumming a guitar, this feels more natural than this way feels.
Yeah, yeah,
and so
yeah.
The same thing with a pool cue. I'm left-handed with a pool cue,
sure.
Too. Left hand when I shoot bow.
But so you bat right-handed.
I bat right-handed, yeah. Throw right-handed. I kick left-footed, though.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know, something weird.
Oh, ambidextrous.
A little bit. I can kick right-footed. It's just that my left's more accurate, but my right's more powerful. So
oh, okay.
Really weird. But yeah, so you got.
So you are dominant right.
I am dominant right.
You can do some things left-handed.
Mostly everything's right, except for a few odd things.
Well, but, you know, Jimi Hendrix, one of the, obviously, the most renowned guitar player of his time, he was actually took a right-handed guitar and turned it upside down.
Yeah, I heard about that. So he learned everything backwards, basically.
Yep, and there was a guitar player from Winona here that literally, I'm trying to remember how he did that. You know, normally the low string and the high string, low string is on top, the high string's on the bottom. And he literally learned, I think he was left-handed, but he played a right-handed guitar, never restrung it. So his low string was on the bottom and his high string was on the top.
Yeah.
So he learned it a completely different way. And it's like anything else, you know, you just got to practice.
Yeah.
Who's that, Allen Iverson, that says, it's just practice.
Practice. We talk about practice?
Practice.
Practice.
It's practice.
Practice. Yep. No, I know exactly what that is. So you learned how to play the drums then when you were how old?
I was probably about 10 when I started beating on the skins.
Did you ever continue playing the drums?
Yeah. I played drums up through high school. And,
okay.
Of course, I was in high school. I was in band, you know, which, again, came naturally. I played percussion. I was in marching band, orchestra. And then we had what is now considered a jazz band, but we called it a stage band back then.
Okay.
And that's basically where you had a horn section, you had a bass guitarist, guitar player, a keyboard player, and then like a drum set.
Okay.
What they call a trap set. And so I played the trap set for that jazz band.
Sure.
And that was fun. And I was playing a little bit, you know, with friends in the garage. The one thing I noticed, though, about playing drums, and this is about the time when I switched to guitar, was drummer never got any action. He was always sitting in the background, got absolutely no attention. All the guys up in front were getting all the attention. I said, this has got to change, man.
Okay, so who gets the most action, lead singer?
Always.
And then what's second?
Probably the guitar player.
I would say, okay, and then the drummer's just forgotten about.
Keyboards are, you know, they're kind of always behind their equipment.
Yeah.
And a bass player is just, I mean, they pick on bass players a lot, but, you know, they are who they are. But, and don't get me wrong, I mean, drummers do get attention. It's just they're usually set up in the back, and they usually got a mountain of drums around them. So you don't get the visibility that the guys in front get.
No FaceTime out there.
No.
Well, except for when they go around and they go, let's hear Bill on the drums, and then they do their thing. Yeah. I was just at a concert with Hurley, and it was a cellist, but his name is Hauser, and he does all these really.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
You've heard of him? Yeah. Okay, then he did that same exact thing, except for he's the cello guy. And he's not singing at all, but I think the guy in the bongos was actually the one singing. But he was just going around strutting his stuff, playing this modified cello. And then he went around, did the whole thing. So there's a trumpet player, a sax, keyboard, drums, a bass, a guitar, and a bongo player.
Was that an electrified cello that he was playing? And what I mean by that, it doesn't have your big round body like an acoustic one.
It didn't have the big round body. It had like a shape of a frame of it.
Right. Yeah,
but there was nothing.
So it's an electrified one.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it was not plugged into anything like that. But okay. Okay. So I didn't know that was what that was called.
Yeah.
So electrified.
Because your acoustic one is going to have the big F holes and the big wide.
Yeah.
Body
this guy
on
wouldn't
it.
Have been able to do what he was doing if he had that thing with him.
No. And that's and all he does is use that for a concert. You know, to be able to amplify the sound.
Sure.
That's all that's for.
So you were doing garage bands and all that kind of stuff too when you were younger?
Oh, yeah.
So did you ever have a band in high school?
Yep.
Okay.
There was a couple guys from, I went to Cotter. And so there was a couple guys from Cotter, a kid that I actually went to grade school with. He was a drummer. And, of course, he knew a bass player. And then there was another guitar player. So we were doing mid-70s stuff, you know. This was, you know, I graduated from high school in 77, so.
Okay.
It was mid-70s stuff, so it was.
Popular.
Yeah, well, it was like, I think we did like Bad Company. And,
okay.
What's the other Southern rock band? Boy, I'm having a.
Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Yes.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, Lynyrd
Skynyrd. I know a little bit about
that. There
bands,
you go.
Yes.
So, I mean, we were just doing all that stuff, and. But we never got out of the garage, you know. So,
okay.
Yeah, we just entertained ourselves, and that was always fun. But we practiced a lot.
That's good, though.
There we back to the practice thing. I hooked up with some guys from Winona High School, and it was kind of like a buddy band. But we did play. We like played down the band shell and over at the Eagles and things like that. Where it was generally for some type of charity. You know, we never got paid for anything, and. We had, you know, real small PA, so it was, I'm trying to remember some of the guys' names, but it was like, it must have been like six piece. You know, we had a drummer, two guitar players, a keyboard player, and then the lead vocalist actually played trumpet too. So if you can imagine playing a rock song with a trumpet solo in it.
Oh man.
It's kind of unique.
It's six piece, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty big. I feel it's pretty big.
Well, it was just a group of friends that would get together and enjoy doing something, whether we did it good or not good wasn't the issue. It was just that we were
getting out there.
Having fun. That was
did you guys
thing.
Get paid?
No.
No. Perfect.
The paying
was the opportunity.
The paying came later.
Ah, the opportunity is all you're going for on that one.
Yep.
And well, the band shell is pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I actually got a few pictures. I came across a few pictures. But there I am, you know, looking young and full of piss and vinegar, you know.
Did you always have the long hair?
It was real bushy.
Really bushy. Yeah. Oh, so very 70s.
Yeah, very, very 70s. Very 70s. In fact, I grew a beard one time, and they said I looked like the drummer from Boston, and I don't remember what his name, Sib Sahan or something like that was his name.
Was that a compliment or not a compliment?
At that time it was, because Boston was big.
Yeah.
Boston
I was just
huge.
Wondering if that was a compliment or if the guy was kind of weird or something.
Oh, no,
He's
no,
like,
no,
I don't want to look like that guy.
I think he was part Middle Eastern, but at that point in time, Politics wasn't a big issue.
No, not like nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Like everyone. So then what happened after graduation for you?
Well,
did you break up with the band, or are they kind
of? Yeah, we kind of all went our separate ways. Sure. And actually, that's where I met Tom Hips and Gordy Overing.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know those two.
Well, I definitely know Tom.
Yeah.
Do I know Gordy?
You probably have met him before.
Okay.
Yeah, probably not a lot, but they had their own band, and they were looking for someone to replace one of their players, and they called me up and asked me if I'd be interested, and they were pretty new, you know, so they didn't know a lot about progression and chords and chord fingering and things like that. So so they called me up and I said, sure, I'll try it. And they were just floored. They just thought I was going to turn them down. If you ask Tom today when he first asked me, he never guessed that I would have said, yes, yeah, I'll come and play with you. So that was that started, and we got together and started rehearsing. That's when the gig started getting paid for.
Oh. Yeah. So what year are we talking? Fresh out of high school, or
yeah, about I want to say, let's see, I graduated in 78 year.
Okay,
after.
So then, what is fingering? Because that doesn't sound good. Well, it sounds good, but it doesn't sound good at the same time.
Depends on what you're talking about.
We're talking music. So what are we talking about?
Well,
then?
Well, just your chord fingering, like you're on your neck of your guitar.
Okay, thing I sucked at.
Yeah, well, could be. I don't know. I've never seen you play.
Trust me, don't want to hear it.
Let me be the judge of that.
Trust me, I don't even know the keys or the chords anymore. I don't even know what the chords mean anymore.
Oh, no.
I thought it was like Elvis something eats peanut butter and sandwiches or something. It was a way to remember it or something.
Really?
I can't remember how that went, how the strings go from top to bottom, but there was a way, they had an acronym that they had.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. It spells out.
It spells out
You
something.
Use the words for each, yeah. Because yeah. It's E-A-D-G-B-E.
Well, this is probably Elvis 8, what was it, B?
D.
Elvis 8, Deli, what else we got?
G.
Deli. Garden salads
and B and E.
And I can't remember what it was, but yeah, there was some acronym that the lady taught me, and I think it's one that's kind of well known. Someone can comment below and let me know what that was. That'd be fantastic. We need comments on this podcast.
That'll work.
So then you start getting paid, and what kind of music were you playing then at that point?
Well, we were doing mostly top 40, and you know, like we got into the medleys where we string a bunch of Beatles songs together.
Oh, okay.
And I think a lot of it had to do with we were playing more to, instead of just playing for ourselves and to ourselves, now we're playing to a crowd.
Okay.
So now you got to take that into consideration when you're compiling your song list. You have to pick songs that are popular mm-hmm. at the time. And then as you go along, you evolve with each new song that comes out.
Okay.
And you got to be able to play it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sound good at it. So it was, you know, we were doing Billy Joel. And
what years was this, I guess?
Oh, this was 79, started in 70, late 78, and I was with Ritz until 1981.
Okay, so you're playing top 40 hits at that point in time.
Yep.
Okay, give us some of the songs that you...
Oh, my God.
Give us some good ones.
I'm going to have to pull this up on the phone.
Oh, no, well, you can always do that. That's fine. But was there like a favorite song you ever played with them? That you can recall, like this one was just every time we did it, it was either a hit for the crowd or it was just something that was fun to play.
Lynyrd Skynyrd always went over good.
Sweet Home Alabama.
That one. Let's see, not that smell, but Gimme Three Steps. That was always a big one.
Sure.
And then of course Billy Joel. We did Billy Joel. REO Speedwagon was kind of big back then, and of course the Beatles medley and Bad Company.
The Beatles are still a big hit then at the end of the
70s? Oh, absolutely. You can play Beatles anywhere.
All right, that's true.
People are going to recognize it.
I do, you know, at karaoke, I like to sing Twist and Shout. Paul Ebner told me that's one of my good ones because I already have a raspy, crappy voice. And that one was just yelling at that point.
Sure.
So, okay, then you're playing those songs and you're playing top 40s hits at that era. So then when you go from there... How long does this band hang out together then, or do you guys evolve into something more?
Well, because we're kind of serious and we're actually getting paid for this,
yeah,
we spent a lot of time rehearsing.
Okay.
So, in a what garage, I mean by that...
In a garage
no,
or somewhere?
No, it was actually in a basement. It
okay.
It happened to be, I think it was Gordy's house. And I think we practiced at my house basement too. But the thing about rehearsing is you want to take the song, but you don't want the song to sound just like it came off the record. So you add a little few twists to it.
Okay.
You know, create some maybe an added chorus or throw in a bridge someplace where you're not sounding exactly like it was recorded.
Sure, so, okay.
And that was the beauty of not only practicing but performing live was you kind of made it put your own twist to the song.
Well, when you guys came, you talked about your set list just a moment ago, and it reminds me of me talking about a wrestling, because you've been to my wrestling show before, and it reminds me of going through a show. Usually, here's how it goes. Sorry for those who are out there listening, and I just ruined your wrestling for you. But mostly, when you have the first match, normally the good guy or the face wins to get the crowd up like this.
Right.
And you're supposed to take them through a roller coaster of emotions where you bring them up high at first. Everyone's excited. You start bringing them down. You bring them up, and there might be an intermission, and you kind of bring them down. At the end, you really bring them up there for that end. Is that how you would stage your set list then?
Pretty much. You know, the idea of having the popular songs, like, let's say the first song of the night. Mm-hmm. You know, you always want to kind of capture them right off the bat.
Yep.
And so that's that high. And then you go into some of the lesser known songs of your set list. And then right in the middle, you throw in your ballad, you know, because you got to have people come out and slow dance.
Of course.
A lot of guys, that's all they could do is slow dance. They couldn't get out there and dance if their life depended on it. So you kind of went through that progression, and then you'd end the set, and they're generally anywhere from 3 to 4 sets per night. So you'd always end the set on a really kick-ass song.
Okay, so give me a good start song to start the night off with, and then give me your favorite end song that's a really good one that really gets them to go home.
Well, on a start song, you want to have a song that has kind of a build-up intro.
Okay.
Because, you know, you got your people are anticipating the start of the show. You know, you got minimal, everything's dark up on stage.
Yeah.
Because you got all your stage lighting up there to make you look cool.
That's right.
And then
fog machines.
Yeah, got the fog blowing out there. So you start out a song that's got a good build up intro. And then it's got a nice steady beat through the whole thing. You know, it's like any typical song, you got a chorus, a verse. Another verse, and then you go into a chorus, and then there might be a bridge that kind of breaks up the chord progression that you were just playing, and then it goes into a chorus, and then you do the last verse and chorus, and then end it.
Okay.
And in typical rock and roll fashion, you always had that, what they called the stadium ending. And that's where you got these, you extend it out for like 3 minutes.
Okay.
You know, you're just slapping cymbals and hitting power chords.
Sure.
And then we all jump up at the end.
We'll smash our guitars at the end of it.
No. We weren't there yet.
We weren't paid enough at the moment. What's a good song to end with then? Is there one that's like, this is good, and here's why it's a really good one? Because you just told me, I'm going to let you think about it for a second, because you just told me the progression of a song. You got to build it up for the first one. Then, I don't know, maybe you guys are all out there at the beginning, or maybe one person comes out at a time. I know people have done that before where someone starts playing, and then all of a sudden the next person walks in, and they start playing theirs. Next person walks in, they start playing theirs, and then it builds up to the actual song. And then you get them up on a high rise like that with the song everyone knows. So what's a good one that you would end with?
I think with Ritz, because of that era, and that's, I mean, each band I could probably give you an example of what we would end a night with. But in Ritz's case, a band called Head East, and Never Been Any Reason was their big hit. And they're a band out of South Dakota or North Dakota or something like that.
What's their big song?
Never Been Any Reason.
Never Been Any Reason.
Yeah. Okay. And it was one of those where it starts out with everyone playing, and there's a synthesizer playing a nice steady line, recognizable, I shouldn't say line, but melody. So a recognizable melody. So when they hear that melody, they know the song already.
Okay.
So, you know, and then it starts out with everyone playing, like I said, and then it graduates into just drums and the guitar. You know, and then so it does that for a couple measures, and then you go into a verse.
Okay.
Yep. So it kind of, again, it builds up at the beginning and then kind of slides into the verse and then go into the chorus. Now, the best part about this song was it had a bridge where everyone would stop playing, and because it was a very harmonic song, you know, here we're hitting the vocals pretty good too. So we got three-part harmony going on. It's nice and full. So all you got are just the vocals and the bass drum going, you know, keeping the beat. So this allows the crowd to get involved where they're singing, they're clapping. So that now you have everyone on the dance floor hooked. They're standing up by the front of the stage.
Sure.
Because we've basically shut everything off except the vocals and the drums. And then eventually it goes back into the chorus again, and then it ends one of the anthem endings. You know, drag it out as long as we possibly can. And what that does, again, it gets them all fired up, so then you open yourself for an encore.
Ah, that's where I was going next, is the encore, and you beat me to it.
And sure enough, we always had a specific song that we did for an encore.
Song or two?
Well. No, it was just generally one.
Just generally one, okay.
When you're playing the bars, they got to have everyone out by a certain time, so you don't want to run past that. So yeah. We try to get as much out of the night as possible.
Sure. Well, and you know... Funny thing is, Hurley and I, we went to this concert. It was a boy band concert, and we had had a couple beers, and so there was a first part, then there was kind of an intermission-ish between it, then they did their second part, a little bit of an intermission, maybe 5-10 minutes or so, where they went and just kind of did like a change of clothes, and then we thought they were getting to the end of the night, so we're in the upper deck at the Chicago Theater. Yelling, one more song.
No way.
One more song. And it's just him and I really yelling it out. In the Chicago theaters, big.
Oh, yeah. There's
like 5,000 people.
Yep.
But not too big to the point where they didn't hear us. They heard us, and they go, we still have more songs, like four more. And they're like, oh, shit. And we looked at each other, and we tell that story to ourselves all the time.
Live and learn, baby. Live and learn.
So then have you always... Do you always get an encore? Do people always go, encore, one more song? Or are there some nights where not never happened?
Yeah, I think probably 90% of the time.
Okay.
Because, I mean,
just kind of in,
especially back in those days, because live music was huge.
Right. It's yeah, not it like was, it is now where you can get on right. your phone. You
yeah,
know?
It's really tough. Live music is really tough. Mm. In Winona, it is. Yeah. I mean, you literally got to go to La Crosse, Rochester, or even up to the cities to get... Yep. Just a variety of live music, you know,
yeah.
from country to rock to heavy metal or, you know, whatever happens to be playing.
Sure. So then, okay, so you're with this band until what, 81, you said?
81.
What happens next then? Because we're in 2025, so we got a long ways to go here.
Yeah.
What's next?
Well, I think through my career, I think what I noticed a pattern, and what that would be is I had to take a break every once in a while.
How long is a break considered?
Couple years.
Oh, a couple years,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking a couple months, but
no,
okay.
No, it generally you got to, and plus I had, you know, I was married, had a couple kids.
Sure, sure.
So, and the reason why I had to quit was because they were going out on the road, and that just unfortunately was not in my cards. I just couldn't, you know, quit my job and go do this, you know, for hot dogs and
hot dog and a handshake, as they say in the wrestling industry.
And what's the ramen noodles? That's what it was.
Gosh, just a lot of sodium. So what happens next? And you form another band a couple years later?
Yeah, I got, you know, after my 2-year hiatus, I got the itch again, you know, and you always get the itch.
So. Yeah.
And I said, well, I think it's time to start my own band. So got together with some people that I knew. Sat down, practiced a little bit, you know, and you jam. You know, you basically just jam.
Jam session?
Yep. Got the jam going and invited some other people that knew other people. And we finally came up with a 5-piece band. And this, now we're into the 80s, obviously. So now you're into Ozzy Osbourne.
Okay.
And, you know, a little more of the hair stuff.
Yep.
And
yep.
AC/DC. And so, I'm sorry, I got a cough here.
That's okay. So are you more into that hard rock, heavier metal type music? Or is that what you're more of a fan of? Or because, you know, like if I go back to the 70s, I like a lot of soft rock, which is considered now yacht rock, quote unquote. Yep. I like that kind of music, which you're talking about, Ambrosia, maybe Foreigner, stuff of that nature. Are you more into the heavier rock?
Or? I'm more into the spirited side of things, meaning that it was generally fast moving, very danceable.
Sure.
But required pretty good on vocal chops.
Okay.
You know, and again, I had a good ability to a very good range, actually. And so I was able to hit some real high notes that a lot of people couldn't.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that was in that type of music, you know, that was out there. And it was basically a lot of bands. And they were in that era of where the hair metal started to come around, hair music. So that was.
So what's the next band called then? What are we?
Okay.
And is it a huge piece of people or is it just a few?
Yeah, it was a 5-piece band. It was called Haven. You know,
Haven.
we came up with this symbol. We wanted the single name. Came up with Haven, and we had some guy design a backdrop for us, and we started going out. You know, and we had a good song list, so that's where people started really paying attention to it. We had good vocals. We had good instrumentation. We put on a good show. We had a huge light show. And in that era, the show itself was half the battle. You know, you
really?
Could be good at the music, but your presentation of that music is what really captured the crowd.
That's like me at karaoke.
Yeah.
I have no vocals. I mean, I can, but I'm more theatrics.
Right.
Because I suck.
Well, and just like wrestling. Just like wrestling.
Well, that's true, too. Yes. It is, you know, think of Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan, what was his move list? Punch, scoop slam, leg drop, fire up the crowd. But all it was. But the crowd was into it for whatever reason. Half the battle, like I said, at karaoke, I stink at singing, but I'll get up there and I'll dance around and I'll perform like no one's business, but I ain't got the vocals for it, I can tell you that much. So you're saying now you get to the 80s and it's a little bit more, we need to have a show.
Yep.
Plus we got to play.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. The show, I mean, it was, we would take 4 hours to set up the show.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
And then how long to tear down?
Generally 2.5.
Okay.
You know, so, but still. But the show was probably the most important. The way we constructed the set list and making our presentation. And, well, I got a scratchy throat right now.
That's okay.
You've
had a lot of singing in your life.
Yeah. So that was the most important part, was putting that out there and making sure it was done correctly.
Right, yep.
Which, again, gets us back to practice.
Yep, practice. Allen Iverson, practice.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you guys come up with the name Haven? You said it was Haven, right?
Yeah.
How'd you come up with that name?
Not sure. I was putting this synopsis together of what I did.
Sure.
And
it's a little ways to go.
Yeah, I think it was just a shorter version, you know, because there was this band called Heaven.
Okay.
And, you know, they had the big hair and they had the big vocals and everything. So I think it was, it came down to, it was very simple. And we even looked up the definition of Haven, which is a safe place.
Sure. So you guys were a safe place.
Yeah, we were safe.
Kind of. Good. So you played pretty much all 80s music?
Yeah.
Was it mainly rock and roll?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was all rock and roll.
It was. And how long that last until?
Well, it's kind of interesting that you asked that. We went, number one, we went through several iterations of the band, you know, meaning that people left.
Yeah.
So we had to replace them. By this time, we had probably accumulated, I'm going to say $20,000 in gear. At that time, that was a
lot
of
gear. Did you make $20,000 by that time?
Oh, hell no.
Oh, it's like wrestling.
No.
Okay,
gotcha. That wasn't why we were in it, trust
me. No, I know. That's not why. It's literally all opportunity.
Right, right. But, I mean, we were probably one of the highest paid bands around the area.
Was it which in was the Winona probably area? About,
pardon?
The Winona area? Yeah. Or further out?
Well, wherever we went, you know, we were generally the highest paid band because we put on the biggest show.
Yep. Okay.
But we were probably doing about anywhere from 8 to 1,000 a night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, it's tough to get that nowadays.
No, I know.
Unless you are a touring act, then you're going to get, 3 to 4,000. But anyway.
Do you know what Johnny Holmes gets at all? Because he's here every single year.
I bet you he gets, I'm going to say it's got to be $8,000 to $12,000, I would guess.
And he like doesn't even hardly do anything. It's like his band. He just, his name is on attached to it.
Do you know how much Hairball was getting when they were playing Wednesday nights?
No.
They were getting, I believe it was, because it was a Wednesday night, which is their cheapest night price, I think they were like $14,000.
Whoa. I've only heard of them around this area. However, when I was just literally up watching the cello guy, Hauser, play in Mystic Lake, I believe Hairball's advertisement came up on the screen saying they were going to be here. And that's, you know, about 3,000 person venue, I think. Yeah. So I guess there could be some money to be made.
Oh yeah, those guys well make over six figures a year.
Wow. Easily. Wow, that's okay.
But they put the time into it too, man.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're gonna get paid that, you better start sticking to it.
Yep.
Once this catches fire, this podcast, boy, I'll be just sitting here all day. I won't even leave the seat.
How's that? What's that? Do you do that?
Yeah, make it rain with the money. Yeah, no kidding. That's about it. Jeez, yeah. Well, I got a question. You go back to what you were just saying about Haven. We had a couple reiterations of the band.
Yep.
There's always that, it seems like, in every major band.
Right.
If you ever go and watch a band, let's just say Journey or Metallica, whoever, if you ever go to one of their concerts, do you ever feel like I'm getting the maybe the Wish.com version of this band or the dumbed down version of this band because it's not all the original people? If you ever go and see them, I'm not big into those bands, but I do know that they switch a drummer. It could be a guitarist, but as long as the vocalist is still there, it's still pretty much the same band because, like you said, the back people, a drummer, you can switch that guy out and may not even know about
right,
it.
Right.
Do you ever feel it's not the same?
Yeah, I think the iconic position, generally the lead singer in mm-hmm. most cases.
Steve Perry Journey.
Yep, is very important. But right. The thing about, and you bring up Journey, which is interesting, because Journey is the exception. And the reason why they're the exception is because they have such a catalog of iconic songs.
Okay.
And as long as somebody can sing like Steve Perry sang.
But can they?
As long as they can sing like he sang. Because the thing about Steve Perry is, as he got older, he couldn't sing like he used to sing.
Okay.
And
okay.
That happens.
You know,
That happens.
I know some people have vocal cord issues. I think John Mayer was one of them, actually.
Yep. So when they got this guy from the Philippines, Journey did.
Really?
That was one of the things that just blew my mind was how close to sounding like Steve Perry he was.
I didn't think anybody could do that.
But yeah, I mean, and the guy was a karaoke fanatic.
Okay.
Did you ever hear the story about that?
No.
Really?
No.
They were, when they were looking at putting it together, it was Neil Schon, the guitar player, and Jonathan Cain, the keyboard player, were just going through YouTube videos.
Oh, okay. So this is not that long ago. It's YouTube era.
It was probably 15 years ago.
Okay. Well, YouTube has been out, I think, since 2008, but what I was thinking is more like back in the late 90s or something.
No,
pre-YouTube.
No,
okay.
No.
So it's not even that long ago.
Mm-mm.
Okay. No, I've never heard the story. I love this.
So yeah. So I mean, they were scouring the YouTube videos for just because they were running out of options.
Sure.
And they came across this guy from the Philippines that was singing Journey songs. He was, number one, he was singing in a band, and then he'd do karaoke with them. So what they did is they called him up, and they actually were interviewing both, Panita or something like that? I can't remember
this story at all, okay. So you're asking the wrong person
okay.
at the moment.
So they called him up, and they invited him. They flew him over to the States, and they did a practice with him.
Sure.
Jam session. Tried him out, and they just, the guy knocked their socks off. So they literally, they flew back to the Philippines, they talked it over, and they said, we'll take you. So this guy was just, this, and I mean, he was probably in his early 20s, so he wasn't that old. The rest of the guys were, you know, in their yeah. late 40s and mid 50s.
Sure.
By the time that happened. So he was, you know, he was fresh, he had the voice for it, you know, and he had the, you know, he was able to do this night after night after night. You know, that's another thing about, as you get older, it's tough to keep the stamina of belting sure. out some of that stuff. Yeah, it's really difficult to let your voice regenerate itself after a night of screaming your head off.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So he, and I remember reading when I read that article how his very first concert, he was so excited, he hyperventilated through halfway through the show, and they had to take just an unscheduled break so he could at least catch his breath and get back.
Yeah.
But it took him a little bit to get used to, you know, this is something you're going to do night in and night out. So you got to kind of pace yourself through the evening. Yeah. To
it's like a marathon. Rest. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Oh, no kidding.
You got to go throughout. I mean, what does a band normally play when they would, like, I know you've done hours,
right?
But there's like a 15 minute break in between or more, and then you do another 45 minutes and like another 15 minute break and kind of mingle with the crowd. But when you're on stage, it's just one after the other after the other. You might take a little break of like introducing the band, which catches your breath.
Yep.
How long are they doing it for on stage when you're doing like a rock concert? Have you been to one?
I've never really been to one. Very large venue type setting, or you got a national act, mm-hmm. it generally is, you know, you got a warm-up band.
Yeah,
you know, they generally play anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour.
Jeez,
and of course they have that time to tear down and set up the next band. But when the headliner comes on, it's generally anywhere from hour and a half to, I think Bruce Springsteen is known for putting on marathon concerts.
Really?
Yeah, like two
Get
and a half
hours. Your
money's
worth there, huh?
3 hours, yep.
Okay.
Yep. You know, and there again, the artist has so many hits that, you know, it takes a while to get them all played, you know.
Which one do you play? You know?
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go back to your journey.
Yeah, okay.
Not Steve Perry's journey. And where are we at after this then? In 91, where are we at? I mean, you talk
oh,
about...
Oh, yeah. Well, I was living in Stockton at the time.
Stockton, Minnesota.
Yep, Stockton, okay. Minnesota.
For those who are listening that may not be from the area, Stockton, Minnesota, just outside of Winona.
Yep, just a little...
Over a hill.
Small, yeah, over a hill, and it's in a valley. Well, we had like probably about 6 inches of rain in about 45 minutes.
Holy shit.
Just a downpour. Well, it was very concentrated and centered right over the city. So all these dry runs empty into this valley.
Yeah.
And we had a flash flood. And all my gear was sitting in the garage. And we had 12 feet of water around our house.
12 feet of water?
12 feet of water.
Not 12 inches, 12
no,
feet.
No, not 12 inches, 12 feet of water.
Whoa.
It had backed up, you know, because it's Stockton, the creek runs out to Minnesota City, out to 61 there.
Okay.
And then you probably remember the flood of 2007, right?
I remember that one.
Yep.
91,
and see, it was the same thing, but even worse.
Okay.
But in this case, in 1991, Stockton was basically the only place that really got damaged bad. We crawled off our roof into a rescue boat.
Oh,
let me say that again. Off our roof into a rescue boat.
That is 12 feet of water.
And 12 feet of water. And the shoreline was maybe 500 feet away.
I got to look this flood up because I've never heard about this one, I don't think.
No, what year were you born?
87, so I've been
okay,
four.
Okay, yeah, so you'd have been four.
I mean, I feel like I would have heard about it, but...
Yeah, look it up sometime.
I'm going to have to.
It was called the mud flood because there was mud everywhere.
I will see Bill on a boat.
Maybe.
Possibly.
I know I was in a couple articles.
Okay.
I was in a couple articles. They came and interviewed me. So... Anyway, just to give a kind of a scope of how things were, I had a 1974, this will haunt me for the rest of my life. I had a 1974 Gibson Flying V. Thing would be worth probably about
$4,000.
Okay.
Today. I lost that one. Most of my equipment was ruined. There was parts, I don't even know where they went.
So they literally got scooped up in the water and just floated away.
Yep.
Even the Gibson.
Yep. Even the Gibson.
Shit.
Anyway, so we were rebuilding out in Stockton, and I was just kind of putting around down there. I had a four-wheeler, and I was on some four-wheeler trails, and I noticed this odd shape in this pile of debris. This is a year later. And I got over there, and I looked, and I said, man, that's my damn guitar. My guitar was in that pile of debris, Gibson Flying V, and of course it had all basically come apart because it was all glued together and because it sat there so long. So I literally had the guitar. It wasn't worth anything, but there it was. There was a box of my microphones ended up out by Highway 61, out by Minnesota City.
Wow.
So this thing was pretty devastating. Anyway, so that's why Haven ended in 1991, because I lost everything.
So did you have all the band's equipment?
Yeah.
Oh.
See, we had a bus that we carried everything
sure,
around.
Sure, sure. Well,
you
the know, bus like, would have been gone, too, from what it sounds like.
Well, it did suffer some damage, but so did everything else.
Yeah,
so.
Well, 12 feet of water would be over a bus.
Yep. I lost all my vehicles.
Okay. Well, I know this isn't the end of your journey because I know there's something that happens at the very end because I was actually part of it at one point. So what happens after this? The Haven ends, the flood takes the equipment. Where
Haven ends, and so I was, you know, by this time I had four kids. My daughter was actually 18 months old when that flood happened. So I had a couple years of being just a good old dad, you know, to four kids.
And, sure.
You know, they were playing sports and little league baseball. So I did the dad things, and that was great.
Okay.
I had a great time doing that. Got the itch again.
Itch is bad.
Damn old itch.
Well, I feel like it doesn't really leave.
No, I mean, it doesn't.
It sounds good. I don't think it ever leaves, whatever.
No.
Because you have a passion for this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, yep. So what happens next?
So I get a call from this guy. His name is Jeff Thompson.
Okay. Local?
Keyboard player. Yeah, local. Okay. Local keyboard player. I don't know if you ever heard of Section 8.
I don't think
so. The band Section 8.
I know what Section 8 is.
Yeah, I know your dad knows Section 8.
Yeah, so do I.
You know what Section 8 is?
For renting. We
yeah.
Do. Not do the band, too. Though.
Ever since I got into rental property, I know what Section 8 is.
Section 8 is good. No, but we're talking about a band now.
Yes.
Okay, good.
The name of the band is Section 8.
So do you guys need funding, too, from the government?
No.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Had to throw that in there, didn't you?
Section 8 it is. All right, what
so,
happens?
He goes, to, we go down and have a cup of coffee. He says, and this was what, 93, I think.
Okay.
So he goes down and we have a cup of coffee. And he goes, and that was always his lure. Hey, can we go out and have a cup of coffee?
Does anybody want to go for a beer?
Yeah, apparently not. A cup of coffee was a little more subtle, I guess.
I guess.
So we're sitting there, have a cup of coffee. He says, I want to put together a classic rock band. And I said, okay, what do you mean by classic rock? What do you consider classic rock?
Yeah, because what are we talking, 93, you said?
We're talking 93.
Okay.
So grunge is in full force.
Full force, yeah.
All the hair stuff is gone.
All right.
Motley Crue is like, they're yesterday's news.
All right, they're classic rock now.
Yeah. So what do you consider classic rock? Well, this would be late 60s, early 70s. And the radio station out of Rochester, 101.7, I think it's Laser
okay.
101.7.
Well, I think they're still around, actually.
Yes, yep. They were one of the few local stations that started doing this repertoire that they called classic rock. And it was basically mid-60s, Hendrix, Santana,
okay.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Mid-60s, kind of borderline acid, what they called acid rock.
Acid rock, okay.
And then into the 70s, where you had Bad Company, Boston, who were some of the other ones?
The stuff you first
heard. Aerosmith.
First stuff you were playing.
Yeah.
Stuff you were first playing.
So that was what he was pertaining to as far as classic rock. So
okay.
it was really era driven, and there wasn't a lot of artists that compiled them. But these radio stations were pushing it. So it was something different. So we got together. There was a lot, all the local guys. It was Jeff Thompson, myself, Dave Smokey, and I'm sure some of your listeners may recognize some of these names, Steve Troy, Bill Knopp on drums. So these were all guys that I was familiar with, knew their talent, and so it was an exciting lineup.
If you're in the music spot of Winona area, do you just start knowing all the people around?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so there's like a
It's a
hub.
Network.
It's a network. Yeah, okay. Yep. Sounds good. That's what I want to ask you that question. I didn't know, I've never heard of these guys. You guys are all just kind of part of a network that, I play with that band too, and I have too, and I know who you are. Okay.
You know, and again, going back to the fact that this was live music was really big around Winona at that time, so you had a pretty large group of guys and some gals, too, that were really into the live scene, and they all knew each other, you know. And if we had some guy that had to back out at the last minute, we had a list of people we could call that could fill in because they were all familiar with the stuff we were doing at that point in time.
You know, I always got a question. You know, you're talking about, well, they wanted to play classic rock, and we're talking 93, so you go, well, what does that mean? And you're talking late 60s, early 70s. What was before Elvis? Like, what was the music even called? Because as far as I'm concerned,
bebop?
Elvis... Bebop? I know bebop under the bridge.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ask my dad about that one. No, but like Elvis was like the king of rock and roll, they always say. But what was before that? Like, well, I'm going to go out and we're going to go play some Bach tonight, baby. I can't wait to play that classic Bach or Mozart. You know, like, what was even before that? I mean, I know they had a jazz era that happened at one point, but it's really weird. You know, I only think of music, the music that we think of, which is, you know, vocals, a whole band behind it. I only think of that like 50s and newer, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and they're called genres, okay? It's like a movie.
Yep.
They're called genres. So you have, you know, you basically have old time, which are your polkas, waltzes, foxtrots, you know, all
the
danceable
dance halls,
from the 30s and the 40s, or even a little big band thrown in there.
Okay.
And then you got the 50s, the surfing music, bebop, I guess, would be a good way to, you know, the bubblegum stuff, they called it, too, I think they called it.
Okay.
And then the 60s was more of the hippie stuff.
Okay.
You know, where it was, you know, Woodstock was a perfect example of that, where you had this hippie culture going on, and you had these different types of genres that were going on, from acid rock down to folk music.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really varied a lot through that time, and it was, you know, like today you got, you know, rap just kind of dictates a lot
of it. It's almost like it's hip-hop pop. I know there's rap, but when I hear some of the rap that I hear, it seems very hip-hoppy. So, like, even the Super Bowl halftime with Kendrick Lamar, to me, very hip-hoppy. Everyone knows it. The rap I kind of grew up with was like, well, you either know it or you don't.
Right.
And nowadays,
well, it's very generational, too.
It is.
Very
and also, with all the social media we have, TikTok, the reason I knew half the songs on the Super Bowl, like, I knew who Kendrick Lamar was prior to that, but because of TikTok, I knew some of the songs that he played. So you can get a one-minute song or one-minute clip of a song on TikTok. That's how I knew some of the songs that were coming on. But I didn't know the background behind it because I guess a lot of it was him dissing on another hip-hop artist, which is Drake. So I didn't know that until after the fact, but I knew that because of social media. Before that, like you said, you had to go to live bands sometimes.
Yeah.
Or you had to go down to your local record place and pick up a record.
Or have a favorite radio station that played that style.
Yeah, I remember I used to make mixtapes for girls back in the day. But it was mixtape from a CD to a tape, so I had to go backwards because what I'd have to do is take a blank tape, put it in my tape deck, play the CD, and then push record. And then I'd be like, here's your mixtape, girl. And they're like, ooh, this is so nice of you to do. I'm like, except for the fact you're getting a cassette tape. You're not getting a CD or anything.
Right.
So, but yeah, a lot of this stuff is because of the fact that there's a lot of social media presence nowadays, but I think there is a, there's, I still think there's a lot of live band out there. I still see it out there. I mean, even literally two blocks away or so, Ed's No Name always has live bands. They're not like well-known bands by any means, but they're still doing the live local, and they also have different people performing. Even hip hop artists around the area are performing there, so it's really kind of everyone.
Yeah, the thing that No Name is doing is that they're actually artists that basically do all their own material. So they're kind of like in the art side of the music, where they're putting their own progressions together, putting their own words to it, and they're telling a story.
Yeah. Okay.
So unlike what I was doing, I was in a cover band. I was in it for the girls and the money.
Perfect. That's what it's about, I guess. You didn't want to be the drummer anymore.
No.
From when you were 10.
No drummer.
I want to be the front man.
That's
right. So you worked your way from the back to the front by going from drummer to you tried to finger the guitar to I'm the lead
good
guy
Lord.
Now. So
I created a monster.
So I'm the lead guy now. Perfect. See, you worked your way up back to front. You're good. All right. Good. I love that. So you have this new band. What did you guys call yourself?
It was called Go-Kart Mozart, and it was a phrase that came out of a song called Blinded by the Light.
Blinded by the light. Oh, I know. Okay, I love that song. Yep. I've never heard Go-Kart.
And there's
Mozart.
A line in there that goes, and Go-Kart Mozart was checking out the weather, seeing if it was safe outside.
Okay, so I don't know that song that well.
Okay.
I only know Blinded by the Light. That's all
but,
I know.
So, but, you know, Go-Kart was obviously just kind of self-explanatory, but the Mozart part was the classic side of it, you know?
Ah, see, that's where I was like, I'm like, what the hell were you guys playing? Were you guys playing Mozart? Like with a piano? I figured maybe there's like a piano.
Mozart was the classic side of the rock.
Ah, that's how I came up with the name.
So we had, and we had basically three venues that we played. And we played them basically on a monthly basis. So that was enough for us.
Okay.
Yeah, but man, I mean, we were doing Zeppelin, Boston, Santana, Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young.
Okay.
You know, all this stuff that was, another term, I just came up with this, they called it psychedelic. So that was, you know, you got to be on mushrooms to enjoy psychedelic. That was the big thing back then.
All right.
So
perfect.
Who knew? You know, who knew?
You know,
I just had my Jack and Coke. That's all that mattered to me.
That's all that matters. As long as you had the Jack and Coke. That, you know, this is actually going down really well.
It is. I'm ready for another one myself.
Well, I'm
going to
rip one too here. But, okay. So, you know, you just named a bunch of songs that still everyone
listens to
or can relate
Pink
to
Floyd.
Or knows. Yeah.
I mean, I just talked to a guy today, half my age, saying one of the things he wants to do is go see Pink Floyd, or, you know, he may have missed the boat because I don't think they're playing anymore, but they do have they do have Pink Floyd tribute bands out
there.
They
do have that, yes.
But Pink Floyd was big. Zeppelin, Boston. Oh gosh, I wish I could remember half of those songs that we did.
Well, I got a question for you while I'm putting some ice
okay.
in. So we just talked about, like, there's all these bands that have never really gone away, and we're sitting here talking about them 50-ish years later.
Oh, yeah.
Is there bands nowadays or in the last 10 to 15 years that you think that's a band that we'll be talking about 30 years from now?
Stand the test of time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there bands that you think that have that right now?
Right. You mean artists today?
Or within the last 15 years? 10 to 15 years. Is there someone that will keep coming up?
Ooh. Boy, that's tough to say. You know, and of course, I'm not going to be in the Beyonce corner. You know, if anyone, Prince is the one that comes to mind.
That's a good one for sure.
Yep.
Prince will stand the test of time, I think.
I think he will.
Granted, I mean, he was around, what did he start in the late? In the 80s, and he went all the way until
it
even
was
further
later
back?
Than that, yeah.
And he went all the way until the 2000s.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a span.
Yep.
So for, and one that I think.
Because I think he was in high school when he was in the early 2000s.
So even though we're from Minnesota, I don't know much about Prince other than some of his songs. So I don't know much about Prince, but another one that always comes to my mind is Michael Jackson, even though he was more pop.
Right.
So he came into that pop, but he's someone that everyone will talk about until probably the end of time.
Probably, yep.
And just like
he's another example, yep.
But it's different because he's considered probably a solo artist because he didn't have a whole band behind him. He's just a guy singing with a bunch of cool dance moves.
Right. Yeah. It was more it was more the entertainment value than it was the musical value.
Okay. So I'm also going to go off of, and this is going to be controversial.
Dude,
maybe
you driving home. That looks pretty healthy.
I was just doing what you were doing. 50-50s. 50-50s. So another band that I think is, or some bands actually, I think that are still going to be a talk 20 years from now because they're also coming back into the realm of things, Backstreet Boys.
Even I heard about that.
They're coming back and they're going to be doing shows at the Sphere out in Las Vegas. And
are they doing a residency there?
I don't know if it's a residency or if they're going to start touring again. I didn't look into it a whole bunch, but they were just on like the Good Morning Show and they sang, and then the lead singer's voice is not what it used to be.
No,
so going back to, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes ago, we were talking about, you're right, lead singer, you never know what can happen to his voice, but they are still relevant because I have students talking about the Backstreet Boys still. And when they were huge, it was 98, 99. So you're talking 25 years ago or more. And now they're coming back to be relevant again. So if I had to have a band, my classic rock would be the Backstreet Boys.
That really ages you. You know that.
Sadly, it does. It does. You don't have to remind me about that. Okay, so you go from go-kart and Mozart. What's next after that? How long did that span from?
Well, yeah, I think the next thing, I had a pretty period in life there that really shifted greatly. And so go-kart Mozart came to an abrupt end, unfortunately.
Okay.
And it was family-driven, huh?
Family-driven, not a
flood. Yeah, it was family-driven.
Okay.
Different. Yeah, it was just, it had gotten to the point where, you know, for lack of better terms, just life had really gotten monotonous, I guess would be the best way to put it. And so just had to, you know, I had to choose between music and my family, and obviously my family was much more important. So,
absolutely, yep.
I got out of that, and I did, you know, I became a dad again.
Yeah.
You know, and did stuff with the family. And again, I just want to stress when you do music, it does consume a lot of time. So that's why I say get back into doing family things.
Well, when you talk about setup of possible 4 hours, teardown of 2.5.
Oh yeah,
that's just setup
and
teardown.
Doing it 3 or 4 nights a week too.
Right, and mostly on the weekends because nobody's coming out to see a band on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Right. Yeah. Generally, it was like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday type thing.
Yeah. So I get that totally.
Yep. So it did consume a lot of time. So I got back into the family thing, and obviously things didn't work out, and so here I found myself single, you know.
Okay.
You know, divorced after so many years, and you know it was unfortunate, but it happens a lot.
Oh yeah.
So then I decided to take a little break from the hustle and bustle of live music, and I became a karaoke DJ.
Ah, a little bit less setup. Yes. A little more behind the scenes, though.
But that's where the drink came in a lot more, too. I was able to not only drink pretty good, pretty much to my heart's desire, but I was able to have music. And the interesting thing, and this was back in, 2003 to 2006, karaoke was huge. I mean, you could throw a karaoke DJ in any bar, and the place would be packed.
Really?
Now,
I still think it's pretty big.
Again, here's the ingredients. You mix a single guy that's spinning the music, and girls. It was
still about music and girls, as far as I'm concerned.
It was not a good mixture.
Less setup.
But yes, it was less setup. And yeah. That much I enjoyed. But it was kind of interesting, and that's where I met your aunt.
Ah, that's where you met my aunt.
That's where I met your aunt.
Aunt Kathy.
Aunt Kathy. And that's...
What year was that then?
That was 2005.
Okay, 2005.
Yep. First time I ran into her. And what I used to do as a karaoke DJ was, because I was this great singer, I would pick a song, like some type of mushy love song.
Sure.
And I'd find the gal that was sitting all by herself looking like she was having a hard time.
Yeah.
And I'd go ask her to dance. And that was Kathy. She's sitting at the bar with a bunch of guys from work. She's sitting there all by herself, and I went out and asked her to dance.
Oh.
And I said, Kathy Schneider. And she goes, Billy Lonick.
Oh, you guys knew each other beforehand?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, she was married to a kid I went to school with.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Yep.
Yep. So we knew who each other were, and that's where it started. So she started coming to my karaoke DJs, which kind of took the aspect of having to deal with other women in that case. So I had to focus on Kathy.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's kind of where that all took place.
So it was still still music and women, even though it was karaoke.
You know, just so the listeners out there know that it's just entertainment. I wasn't out there looking to the other aspects of that.
Correct. It just comes with the territory.
It was attention and entertainment.
Okay, then you meet my aunt because you sang to her. Do you remember the song you sang? The first time that she recognized you, I guess.
Whoa, my love, my darling.
Oh, man. The Righteous Brothers?
I hunger for your touch. I can't think of the freaking name right now.
Yeah, it's Unchained Melody.
Unchained Melody, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
So that's what she got.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh.
I hope she listens to this and gets reminiscing about that moment.
Oh, she will.
Do you remember where you were at? Which place?
We were at the Minnesota City Bar. It's called Trails End right now.
Trails End now. Okay, yep. So Trails End, that's where the love started.
Steve Moen owned the bar at the time. Yeah. And he was a big, seeing Kathy was working at Westfield.
Sure.
So he was a big guy at Westfield, Steve Moen was.
Okay, yeah.
So that's kind of where the connection all started.
Oh, that's cool then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, hell yeah.
So I know that you're not still a karaoke DJ, so what happened afterwards?
I was totally out of my element, and I'll tell you why. Because I was such a perfectionist when it came to singing.
Yeah.
And no offense, karaoke people out there.
Paul Ebner, no offense to you.
And there's a story to involve Paul Ebner here coming up.
Oh, good, because he's listening,
bet you. Yeah, I'm sure he is. But the problem I had with a karaoke DJ was people who would either sing out of tune or sing out of time. And it literally drove me crazy. I was constantly trying to correct people to either get in time or get in tune.
Uh-huh.
And because I had such a sensitive ear to that stuff, I could pick up the slightest off-key pitch, you know, if they were getting kind of pitchy while they were singing the song. And trust me, in karaoke world, it happens all the time.
Well, I'm part of that problem.
It's like a skip in the record that just keeps on going and going.
So here's the problem I have with karaoke, and I told my wife this. I said, hey, problem I have is it doesn't sound like the real song. And I'm like, I'm so lost half the time because they can't do it because of probably legality reasons and copyright issues. Yeah. But I'm like, it just doesn't sound the same. And then I hear my voice and I know I suck. So they're like, well, that doesn't help me out. At least if the song sounded identical, I would be like, oh, it's not so bad. So when I sing at home, when I throw up YouTube and I put on my microphone and my amp and I start singing and we have some fun when we're drinking, I'm like, ooh, I don't sound that bad. And then all of a sudden I go down and I'm like, oh, I suck. However, I did find out, other than Twist and Shout, another one of my songs that I'm pretty decent at is Austin by Blake Shelton. And I always shout it out to my wife because she's from Austin, Minnesota. So I said, this is for you, Stephanie, because you're from Austin, Minnesota. So if you know Austin by Blake Shelton, you'll understand the whole thing. And it was funny because I did it a couple weeks ago in Austin. And she was laughing, as was the karaoke DJ laughing. He's like, what the hell? He's like, this is great, and I love that you're doing this. So this is awesome.
True story with that. You know, about being good at it and whatnot. But
being theatrical, I was, like me.
One of my jobs that I had in my lifetime was I was a sales guy for a plastic injection molding house. So sure. I go out and sell, try to get business in from that industry. So I was in a sales trip down in Iowa. They set me up at the hotel. I went, had about four companies I had to go visit. So that evening, I went to a bar in a small town in Iowa. Well, when you walk into a small town in Iowa bar, everyone looks at you because they don't know who the hell you are.
That's exactly right.
So I walk into this bar, and they were having karaoke, and I knew that in advance, so that's the reason why I went there. Walked into this bar, everybody watched me from the time I walked in the door till I walked over to the seat. I could see them just watching me the whole time. Yeah. Sat down there, not a soul came to me other than the bartender who got my drink. So I'm sitting there, and so they're taking up names. Well, I always, whenever I go to do karaoke anyplace, I always pick the hardest songs that nobody else sings, just simply because I know I can do them.
Yeah.
So I pick out a couple Journey songs, go up there, and Faithfully, what's the other one? Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. That's Stephanie and her friend's favorite song. I'm so annoyed at that song. I've heard it so many damn times.
It's the most covered song in history.
Don't Stop Believing. Because everyone knows it, and it's, okay, go on. So anyway,
So I get up there, you know, and the guy mispronounced my name, as usual. And get
how
up
can
there
they?
Well, because they always say Lanik. You know, they always give it so.
Lanike.
Yeah, I mean, it's the
I don't even know.
It's not the Polish butcher job, but
sure.
Just, yeah.
Okay, a little different, gotcha.
So get up there, and I sing the song, and I get done. Then all of a sudden, this lady comes over and starts, where are you from? You know, the small talk. Starts talking to me, go up there and do another song, come back. By the end of the night, I got 15 people standing around talking to me, wondering who the hell I am.
Celebrity.
And say, wow, you sounded great, man. You know, it's like, that's typical. That's what
I
enjoy doing.
Did you hear me in Go-Kart Mozart or Haven, or yeah. Where did you hear me from?
No, they don't have a clue. They just know I came in there and sang a Journey song like they've never heard it sung before.
Exactly. That's awesome.
The beauty of small town.
So what happens after? Okay, so what you got? Your next, what's your next venture after you meet my aunt Kathy?
Well,
where do we go from here?
Well,
because I know that you're not done yet, because I know your
not
last
even
venture.
Close. But you know what? While you're doing that, I'm gonna reload.
Oh, and reload. Yeah.
Yep. So the next one,
I'll move your mic just a little bit
okay,
for you.
Get her
so
out of the way.
I don't want you to hurt the microphone, but I know your last venture, because I got to be part of your last venture.
Well, that's the start of this next venture.
That's the start of the next venture.
Yep.
Perfect.
Got together with some guys. You know, again, I pretty in deep with Kathy, and we were dating pretty regularly.
All right. Yeah, Jack Daniels, don't forget to sponsor the podcast.
Yes, Jack Daniels. They start
sponsoring.
Drink of choice for musicians.
Yes. Cheers. We haven't cheers yet.
That's right, we haven't. That's right.
So I know hair metal is one of your things, but I think there's one before this.
Yeah.
It
started out...
And you said this is the start of possible hair metal.
Right. We started out with the guys. There was me, drummer from Winona named Adam Zanzig, bass player from the Cities, Carl Sather. And these were all guys that were approximately, I'm going to say, 10 years younger than I was.
So did you know them prior?
Pardon?
Did you know them prior?
I knew who they were.
So it's not like before where you're like, I've seen you, I've heard you, I've
talked
to you.
Yeah, that's what they were saying to me. You know, they were the ones standing outside Rascals looking in the window while we played up on stage.
There's Bill.
And they
see
were,
him.
Yeah. And they were 15 years old, you know. So
you're a celebrity to them.
To the most part, I was experienced, let's put it that way.
Yeah, we'll call you celebrity.
Okay. That
sounds better.
So, and then the guitar player, he was originally from Rushford. He was living in Rochester. And he was one of these guys... very, very introvert. But when he got up on stage, he was totally different.
It's like his element.
Yep. But he practiced. we go again. Practice. We had practice.
Alan Iverson. So we're back
he
to
would
you.
Practice for hours and hours, and he got the shredding down. You know, all the '80s shredding and stuff like that. Very, very well schooled as far as a guitar player was concerned. So we started out. We were doing basically '80s stuff again.
All right.
You know, let's see, Motley Crue, you, Autograph.
At this point, were you doing any '90s music?
Yes, we were doing a little bit of '90s music.
Because this has got to be, what year did you meet my aunt? What was it, like 2000 something?
2005, I met
Kathy.
So
we're in the 2000s. We're past the millennium.
Yep,
so
and I think we started, it was called Pastel Black.
Okay.
Which was a derivative of a cult movie. And I'm trying to think of what the
Not
name
Pulp
of the movie
was. Not Pulp Fiction, was it?
No. It was a parody movie of a rock and heavy metal band out of Europe.
What is that movie called, too? Oh my gosh, I'm gonna hate myself.
It's right on the tip of my tongue. And
yeah,
I
it's not Pulp Fiction. It's not Detroit Rock City.
No, that's too new.
Shit, just keep talking. We'll figure.
Yeah.
Comment below if you know before we get out.
If you know it.
Yeah, comment.
And I know most of you people know it too, but they asked the band members in an interview in the movie what their favorite color was, and it was pastel black. And there is no such thing as pastel black, but it sounded so heavy metal, you know, pastel black. So that's what we came up with that. So we were basically dressed in our jeans and t-shirts and went out and played this stuff, and we played it good. It was tough going, simply because it was tough to make money on it. I mean, we were getting $350 bucks a night for a gig, and you know, which is a
how many guys were in this band?
There were four of us.
Okay, so you're making less than $100 bucks a person.
Yep. So okay. It was a lot of work, and then of course, as we got a following, we were able to charge a little bit more, and so we were doing. There was quite a few places we played. We played the North Star in Rochester. We had a campground that we were real popular at, just north of Rochester. Being that Jim Humble was a guitar player I was speaking of, being that he was from Rochester, he kind of ventured out. I think we were in Hayfield. We had a place that we played. We played down in Rushford a few times. The bar in Goodview.
Okay.
Other than that, and then the Black Horse, Andre. He would always bring us in every once in a while too. So we had a good rotation of places that we played. We started getting into festivals, but that was, you know, kind of tempered just because we were just this another rock and roll band, you know, that looked like all the rest of them. You know, it was just nothing set us apart, which leads us into the next iteration.
Okay.
Which is Hair Metal Radio.
So what year are we talking here now? You said you met my aunt in about 2005.
2005.
And then 2000.
2007 is when we started Pastel Black.
Okay. Now, I just want to go to that real quick before you go on to the next part. You played some 90s songs. What were some of the 90s songs that you would have been playing?
Chris.
Do you remember? Did I just mind boggle you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we did some Tom Petty.
Okay.
That were big in the 90s.
Sure. Are we talking early 90s stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
What
was that considered then at 2007-ish? What was that considered? Classic rock or just...
Yeah, probably.
Rock?
You know.
Okay.
They were big hits. I'm trying to think of this one that we did. Alice in Chains, maybe?
Okay.
But yeah, there was a few songs that we threw in there. It was more geared towards, you know, the danceable 80s stuff. Motley Crue, AC/DC, Bon Jovi.
Something that gets them out there
on
the floor.
Yeah, you know, the party songs, you know.
Yeah, so Journey. Now you graduate into the next whatever become. Okay.
Here, we just had gotten done playing a New Year's Eve someplace. And you could tell there was a little lethargic feelings in the band. People are kind of getting tired. I mean, we've been at it since, I mean, this is 2015. So from 2007 to 2015.
You were about 8 years with this.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we
That's
were
not
kinda,
a short time.
Yeah. No, it's not. Not
and
really.
I, you know, the thing is, I was in college at this time, so I don't remember this band. So I remember the next part
right,
that comes.
Yep.
that's where I kind of fall in. I'm like, oh, I know Hair Metal Radio, so I know that one. And so, plus, Paul is part of it, but you got to get to that.
This is the way the story goes. We got done playing this New Year's Eve gig, and like I said, you could tell there was a little tension amongst the band members.
Sure.
And the guitar player comes out and goes, you know what? I'm going to start a new band. And I said, okay.
Dick.
How did you know what I was thinking?
Ah, God.
What an asshole move, man. So he goes, I'm going to start a new band. And we had talked previous to this about switching some things up.
Yeah.
And our idea was that we were going to do a 70 set, an 80 set, and a 90 set. And then we dressed the part of each era.
Yeah.
So, but he wanted to do an all 80s, just nothing but 80s stuff, 80s hair stuff. And you know, again, you got your Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, you know, that type of stuff that was really big. So here's what I'd like to do. We're going to figure out what we can do, and we sat down and talked about it. So everyone was on board, the same members, but we were going to put together an entertainment show. It was not so much about just the music and showing up in our t-shirts and blue jeans.
Yeah.
It was about being the part.
Yeah.
So we ended up having to go out and buy clothes.
Yeah.
I put eyeliner on for the first time. I wore blonde hair for the first time. And I had fun doing it, man.
Well, okay, so just going over this last hour and 20 minutes that we've been talking about, this sounds like going back when we're going to reverse to the Haven group where it was 50% show, 50% band. This is what this sounds like in my mind.
This was even a step up from that.
Step up.
Because what we wanted to do is we wanted to replicate what it would sound like if they were playing the album on their stereo in their bedroom.
All right.
So essentially what we were doing, we were only four piece.
Yeah.
You can only do so much with four piece. I didn't play an instrument. All I did was, I was the front guy. Yeah. I was the guy that got the crowd involved.
No, you did.
So you just had a guitar, bass, and drums.
Yep.
So because we had a couple techies in the band, then we started incorporating backing tracks. We had keyboard tracks. We had backing guitar vocals. We would record these thunderous vocal tracks so that when we played, it sounded like your stereo was right next to you when you're playing it.
Yeah.
This big, full sound.
You're right, it did, because I've been there.
Yeah, yep. So, and at that time, that kind of music, it was big. It was huge. So that's what we wanted to replicate, and boy, did it work!
It was very fun. What year did you guys aren't still together, right?
No.
Okay,
no.
You just kind of stopped not too
long
ago.
Well, I basically
right?
retired
from just singing in general.
Just from that band.
Yeah. What year was that then?
That was 2022. The last gig I played.
Gosh, it seemed like it was just like last year, but it's 2025, and we're talking 22.
Yeah, three years
ago. Well, you know, you allowed me to have a part in that.
Yeah.
As have you allowed Paul Ebner, who is a way better singer than I am. He got to even do like a set with you almost.
He did a couple songs. I think we had
three songs. Yeah.
We had three songs picked out for
you. I remember, so Paul and I, we become friends, really good friends in about 2018. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, I do this performance. And I'm like, that's my uncle's band. I'm like, what? When the hell you been doing that? I remember the first time I saw him, it was down Steamboat Days. I don't remember. I think it was pre-COVID, so probably 19. And I'm like,
it was 2018 or 19.
Yeah, yep. I got a photo from that night too. And I'm like, damn, he's good. Like,
yeah.
he plays the part, he does everything. I'm like, wow, he's really good. And then I remember one time we go, well, do you want to do a song with us? I'm like, I would love to, but my vocals suck. And you're like, pick out a song that you know. Here's our set list that we can do. And I I remember.
Yeah, I'm sure there wasn't much out there that kind of captured your attention.
It was the stroke in your version, which I can't remember what the stroke was in your version, but I listened to that son of a bitch on repeat. So I knew the lyrics, and I got out there at Goodview Days, on, I think it was 2018. I just had come from a golf tournament, too. So I was listening to it to the golf tournament. Back from the golf tournament.
And you had your tights on.
I had my tights on. Well, it was easy because I had my wrestling tights. And then I got a blonde wig or a wig from, I think, Paul or you. And I went out there in the crowd, and Jan, Paul, and I were out there trying to get them all fired up. And then after the first set, I got to come on, and I sang the stroke. And it was such a high, first of all. It was a high. Second of all, it's so much different when you're out there because it doesn't – it never sounds like what you think it's going to sound like. No. And you have a monitor up there. You're like, yep, there will be a monitor in front of you, but it's not going to have every single lyric there. It's going to have pieces of it for you to sing.
They're called trigger words.
Trigger words. Yeah, okay, perfect. And I'm up there just rocking my face off at Goodview Days in front of like 200 people. I'm just having the time of my life. I'm dressed in my tights. I look like I'm from the 80s. And I can get where you guys come from, where it's like, this is something that you might go away from for a little bit, but you are going to probably fall back in love with it again. And I want to do it again.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of surprised you haven't been back since.
Well, first of all, it was fun having you up there because you're family. And you know what we say about family. You got a sign on the bar there, by the way.
This is fuck the family
somewhere? About family.
Perfect.
And number two, Ebner was fun because he fit the part. Yeah. And actually, after I retired, they tried to talk Paul into...
He said that.
Yeah, they tried to talk Paul into joining.
I know, and he's got really good vocals. I suck. Like, you want me to dance around and do that? Yeah, I can do that, but I love singing, unfortunately. Like, singing. But I will get you the theatrics. That's like where I'm at. I'm at the theatric part.
The other thing you got to have for lead singers, you got to have charisma.
Yeah.
Charisma is a big part of that because you're the identification with the crowd. Not so much the guys that are playing the instrument, but the guy that's leading the crowd.
Yep.
And that's where I had a lot of fun with, was just the charisma.
It is so much fun.
And Paul had that. Yeah. Paul had charisma.
Well, gosh, it was so much fun doing that. But yeah, so Hair Metal Radio was basically... It was a tribute to all the hair metal type music.
Yeah, but the titans of hair metal.
The titans, and you wanted it to sound like it was coming out of your stereo.
Yep.
And
big.
And it did sound big because every show I ever went to, it felt big. Even if it was at the Black Horse, which was a very small area compared to going to Winona Steamboat Days, which is hundreds of people. It always sounded pretty much the same, and it was loud, and it was, if you were wanting hair metal music, you got hair metal music.
Right. The thing about playing with backing tracks is you're basically tied to a beginning and an end.
Okay.
Because that track is playing from the point it starts, from the point it ends. So the song is literally going to be played the same each and every time.
Okay.
The other side of that coin is when you're playing live and you have all the instrumentation there, you can pretty much make it however, you know, you can virtually play it out as long as you want.
So like you were saying before, when you were younger, you would play it and you'd kind of do a live set and
you'd kind
add
of
whatever
put
you
all your own twist to it.
Yep. But this one, it was identical.
This was very structured.
Okay.
There was a beginning and there was an end.
Was that weird for you?
It was a little bit, but you know, because of technology and the way stuff has evolved equipment wise, you know, the thing is that we on stage knew what was happening, and we had in-ear monitors instead of having the wedge in front of us.
Yeah.
We had in-ear monitors, and that way we had what we call as a click track, and what that did is that kept our timing. You know, so the timing was the same from front to back, and where there was a verse, a chorus, a bridge, a breakdown, you know, where it would maybe change tempo or something like that. So, I mean, it was a very structured beginning to end. And again, that just, the more structured any song was presented to a crowd, the more they enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, well, when I came on stage with you guys, I had only my car radio as my practice. So when I got up there, I had no idea what to expect, except for I knew some people in the crowd that were like, what the hell is he doing? Because I was already out in the crowd ahead of time. And they're like, what the hell are you doing out here just dressed like this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just getting the crowd amped up. And then all of a sudden you went down your first break. And then I'm like, it's my time to go up. I'm like, a little nervous, but I love doing this. And nowadays I'd have zero problem going up. I'm like, whatever happens, just it happens. I love doing it. So
everybody, happy. If you're in the game.
Strokes the word.
There you go.
And you know what? I still have that song on my phone. So it still pops up when I'm working out every so often.
Cool.
So it wasn't the stroke by, was it Billy Squire?
Yeah.
It was a one by
it was another
enough
version.
Stuff or something like that.
Enough is enough.
Yeah. So that was the version I learned. Actually, to be honest with you, that's a pretty cool version.
Yeah, it is.
And it is. So now, as we're starting to wind down here, I got a couple questions because of the fact that you've had so many ventures in music. What is the biggest crowd you've ever played in front of?
About 3,000.
About 3,000. Yep. Where was that at? Do you remember?
I believe it was at a music fest or a town festival.
A town festival, yep. Like a county fair.
City festival.
Okay.
Down in Iowa.
Yep. Okay. And how did that feel playing in front of 3,000?
Oh, it was awesome.
Isn't it better?
It was awesome.
Okay. So some people, and I've said this before on the podcast, I would rather wrestle in front of 10,000 people than 10 people. It's just awkward when you're in front of a very small crowd. But when you're in front of a big crowd, it's just not awkward. And most people, I think, would think the opposite. They'd be like, wow, that's a huge crowd. I'm pretty nervous. And you might get a little nerve within there. That's where the Jack and Cokes come in.
Yeah.
But when you get the crowd going.
So you're learning.
Man, I already knew this ahead of time. But once you get the crowd going, you're like, I'm in my element. This is comfort. And it's so much different. So I always said, I think it's better wrestling in front of a large crowd than a small crowd, and I can only imagine the same's got to be for music.
My biggest difficult crowd was we played this place. It was called Burn Wood Fired Pizza, and they've been doing this for a number of years. I have no idea how many times they've been doing it, how many years they've been doing it. But what it was is this church that had these grounds. And they had these wood-fired pizza ovens on the grounds, and they would, every Wednesday, they would do this music and wood-fired pizza.
Sure.
And I think we had about 2,500 there was our biggest crowd we had there.
Wow, that's still pretty
but
good.
But the thing is what they bring their lawn chairs, so it's kind of like that concert atmosphere.
They're not up dancing around.
Yeah, well, just, you know, they did. They came up and danced. But probably 80% of the crowd was in their lawn chairs with their coolers of beer and eating pizza. So that was kind of a unique situation. But what I liked about it was because I had a wireless microphone, I was able to go out into the crowd.
Oh, cool.
You know, throw the microphone in somebody's face on a very iconic line like, hit me with, you know, whatever.
Hit me with your best shot.
Yeah, whatever iconic line it happened to be. And they're there just taking it all in.
Yeah.
So And it wasn't alcohol driven. That was the beauty of it.
Everyone knows the song.
Everyone knew the song, and they were just there to have a good time, listen to good music, but a lot of people.
Okay. And my last question I have for you before we end this is, I might be putting you on the spot with this one, but is there one song of all these bands that we've talked about all the way from roughly when you were 10 years old until 3 years ago, is there one song that you just absolutely love playing where it was like, I just enjoy it, whether it's because of your own personal reasons or whether it's because of the crowd reaction? Is there one song that just, you're talking all the way back from the late 60s all the way until, I don't know, the 90s. Is there a song that ever stands out to you that was like, gosh, what a fun song this is to play?
You are putting me on the spot because there's so many.
Right.
But the one that comes to mind the quickest is a song by Led Zeppelin, and it's called Thank You.
Thank You.
And it's a ballad, and it says a lot. I actually have sang it often at weddings.
Oh,
because
okay.
It's a love story. If the sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. You know, so it's got that, just a ballad, and it's got those nice tones to it as far as a love song. So
okay.
And I used to knock that sucker out of the park, man. It would go through the roof. And just the way, I just want to add, if you go to YouTube, check out Go-Kart Mozart and Hair Metal Radio and Pastel Black, and you'll see what I mean.
So
they're all on there.
What was the song again?
Thank You by Led Zeppelin.
Thank You by Led Zeppelin.
Yep.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you for coming on in, because
this is going great, man.
This isn't going to be your last time, by the way, because
back. Yep, coming back.
You have a whole other side of a story in your life other than just music.
Yep.
That you're going to be coming back for, but this is your story.
This is my story.
Literally from 10 years old until 3 years ago. And I want to thank you for coming on in, having some Jackson Cokes, and telling your story with us.
Chris, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Well, we got to cheers one more time. Yeah. Don't just shake my hand.
Absolutely.
We're
going to
cheers one more time.
Here we go.
Boom! And for those who are listening, this has been another episode of Brews and Cruise. As the chef in the background says, you should subscribe, like, share, and 5 stars this podcast, because that's the way to get the word out on this bad boy. And Bill had a crazy, crazy story to talk about here tonight while sharing, what was it, the singer's fuel?
This is what makes it go, baby.
This is what makes it go. But this has been another episode of Brews and Cruise. And thank you, Bill. Let's get one more cheers.
That's the way. I like it.
Cheers, and we'll see you guys next week.